Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show. This is a special recording in anticipation of the 2013 Manhattan Cocktail Classic. The Classic is a celebration of the intersections between cocktails and culture. With nearly 100 events spread across 5 days in 3 boroughs and a multi-day trade conference to boot, the Manhattan Cocktail Classic offers a vast array of unique experiences to enthusiasts and professionals alike, expanding the very definition of what constitutes a cocktail event. This year's festivities kick off with the gala on Friday, May 17th at the New York Public Library. For more information about all of the events and tickets, visit ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. Hey guys, what's up? This is Jack Inslee with HeritageRadioNetwork.org for our continuing coverage of the 2013 Manhattan Cocktail Classic, which we are a media partner for, very excited about. And today in studio, sitting down with Spirit bartender, mixology extraordinaire Jason Luttrell of Jaybird and the soon-to-be-opened Analog in the Village. How's it going, Jason?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Happy to have you here in Bushwick in the shipping containers.
Yes, indeed.
No drinks yet, unfortunately, for us today. So you're going to be involved in the Manhattan Cocktail Classic in a big way, and we'll get to that, but I want to give listeners a little bit of context first. Kind of, why don't you explain who you are and what you're doing now in the world of mixology?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question. I don't know really what it is that I do for a living, but it seems just things just seem to work out. I've been a bartender for, you know, the better part of a decade. Now I run a cocktail consulting company called Critical Mass, with some fine bartenders. And, we try to do some, kind of progressive things that put brands out in different, perspectives than they would ordinarily be in.
Cool. Now you got into bartending and cocktails. It's a kind of interesting story. Maybe you want to retell that, the Shooter's Cocktails.
Oh, well, I mean, the long story short is the reason I'm a professional bartender is because I was a sucky drummer. I think that's a lot of people have a similar ramp into the profession. But I've worked in pretty much every kind of bar that I can now imagine, which is pretty substantial from this far in. But my first opportunity behind a bar, I replaced a bartender that had gotten stabbed by one of the customers. But it's a catch-22. You can't get experience unless you have experience. So my experience was being able to survive customers who stab their bartenders.
Sure.
So
you kind of got propelled into that. It wasn't necessarily like you were looking to become a bartender. You just kind of...
Oh, no. I had my eyes on the prize. So that's exactly what I wanted, was to become a bartender. But it was hard to get because nobody would give me a chance. So turns out that I found like the saltiest place in the world. And they had no choice but to hire me because nobody else would take the job.
And then from there, you're going on to like Milk and Honey and White Star, Little Branch, Death and Co. And these are...
Well, it would have been a great honor to have worked in those places. But I was working at the Randolph when it was kind of a, it was a different place back then. They hired Sasha Petrasky to come in and train the staff. And so like, although I never actually worked at Little Branch or White Star or any of those places, I did get the benefit of... Sasha's mastery of the craft, and so we were able to bring that to the Randolph and kind of elevate the style there, while still having a good time and still making excellent cocktails.
So what did you take away from Sasha mostly? I mean, how did that change the way you see making drinks?
What did I take away from it? I would say that I took away from Sasha the experience of being able to kind of conceptualize cocktails as far as like the different components and how they work together to make something that's, you know, if not brilliant, okay, you know. But the drinks ended up being stellar despite my efforts. You know, we were able to kind of pass on the tradition to a lot of other people. And
so it's not just as easy as learning new drinks and new recipes, though. It's kind of a holistic way of looking at things.
I like to think of it like that. Yeah. I mean, you know, they put a chimpanzee in space. So like they, you know, you can put somebody in a situation where they can do something extraordinarily well. But it does take a certain amount of passion and commitment to do it. You know, like even the gin and tonic, for instance, is something that can be made exceptionally well if you, you know, put some intensity and effort into it. You know, there's a lot of things that you just kind of have to know. Like we like at the Randolph, we were kind of known as a bartender's hangout. So we got thrown a lot of wacky requests. And so we kind of were able to build our lexicon like that.
Give me an example of a wacky request at the Randolph.
Well, at the time, I didn't know what a Vieux Carré was. I didn't know what a Ramos Gin Fizz was. So, like, we had to, like, we knew the menu, the short menu. I think it was, like, 9 drinks or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we knew those, like, no problem. We could make those in our sleep. But we had all the ingredients that we needed to do to make other things. So when people would come in at 2 o'clock in the morning and be like, man, I've been thinking about just having a... you know, a 50-50 all day. I'm like, 50-50? Like, presumably that's 50% of one thing, 50% of another thing, but what are these two things? So, like at the time, we didn't know what those were. You know, but we were never afraid to ask. There's no embarrassment in that.
And did you come out of the Randolph feeling like you pretty much could handle anything thrown at you now?
Yep, until I got the job at Death & Co. And that's when I realized that I really didn't know anything.
Oh, man.
But you know, the cool thing about what we do for a living is that it's a series of mentorships and you know, hey, I don't want to dog on any other like facets of the restaurant community, but like we are wide open with each other. There seems to be no secrets. Like we share all the information that we have, all of our tricks, techniques, everything. I think that's unique to bartenders.
Absolutely. And now with the Manhattan Cocktail Classic coming up, it's kind of a good time to check in on the state of things, I guess, at large in the drink community. So I'm curious to hear some of the trends that have emerged over the past year that you'd like to see go away.
I don't know. That's a tough one. Some of the things that I'd like to see go away are more perceptual than like actual physical. You know, like there isn't one ingredient that I'm exhausted of yet. There isn't one technique that I'm exhausted of yet. But I do think that the concept of complex is better is kind of on its way out. Mm. And I think people are starting to focus more and more, like we say this every year, but it keeps on getting better, where people start focusing more and more on service rather than, you know, being obnoxiously creative, which is irritating for me because I don't consider myself to be wildly creative, other than, you know, perhaps like maybe kind of figuring out new ways to do the same old thing.
Right. That's what I want to ask you, because complex, some people may immediately jump and think of like a Booker and Dax, but then you'll hear their explanation and it's like, no, we just want to make the best old fashioned we can.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you say complex, do you mean a lot of unnecessary ingredients and just...
Well, if a maybe is always a no. Like if it might not be adding to the drink, chances are it's a little too much. Mm. But you know, like recognizing the subtle nuances of an individual component that you're working with, and you know, trying to emphasize that, making that the focus of the drink or whatever. You know, sometimes that means just adding a splash of water.
Gotcha.
You know? Yeah. But, like it's not. It really doesn't have to be as crazy as you know, like what we know is I feel like enough to blow the minds of a lot of people who don't know anything about it, and sometimes simple is always better.
Yeah, for sure. And more effective. And follow up to that, this is another thing I've seen popping around. If there's one drink you would like to never serve again as a bartender, what would it be?
Well, that's easy. A glass of water. Well, you can get that at home.
All right. I'll rephrase it. What, a cocktail that you'd like to never serve again. Something you get asked to make that you're just like, I wish people wouldn't drink that, you know.
I get orders for, you know, sometimes people come in and order shots of bitters and things like that. And, you know, that's, you know, it's, you know, I think that's silly, but, you know, it really isn't. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm not paying for it. I'm not drinking it. So it doesn't matter what I want. But yeah, seriously, guys, if you want bring in a bottle of water if you want to drink water at a bar. It's a bar.
Yeah.
You know, amen. I mean, you know, we want people to be safe and healthy and not drink too much, but, you know, seriously, come on, guys.
Hand up in the back. Water. I need two waters back here.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get to you. So, interestingly, though, you know, you're doing a single malt tour in Williamsburg as part of the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. So where does that come, the kind of single spirit focus? Is that something that – have you always been a whiskey guy or
– I've always been a big drinker in general, but yeah, like ever since I got back from Scotland last December, I've definitely had a keener interest in Scotch whiskey.
Sure.
And it's kind of been like a dual purpose for me, like to be able to like show the cool nuances of Scotch whiskey, but also kind of show people that that Brooklyn is like specifically Williamsburg and beyond is, you know, like a really progressive, cool spot to go out and do these things. And hopefully, you know, there's going to be a lot of people from out of town, and hopefully, you know, like they'll kind of get to recognize a few different places that are really cool for this.
So I know a lot of people out there consider themselves bourbon drinkers and then maybe rye to a lesser extent. And then I hear a lot of people say, well, I don't really like Scotch. Why do you think that is? What turns people away from Scotch, and how can they get into it? What's a good entry point?
I don't know. I'd try some of the more mainstream things that you can get. And then if that interests you, like, I'm not a big fan of like begging people you know, explaining why they should like it. You know? So if they don't like it, they don't like it. Just to put things in context a little bit. You know, like I was working at an event with tequila the other day and like I was trying to like explain to people that it was my job to explain to people that, that it takes a long time for that tequila to get there, you know, like an agave plant. Mm-hmm. You know, it matures in 8 to 12 years or so. So, and then it's distilled in one day, and then it's aged. So it takes a long time to get there. So, like, just have a basic consideration of like what it takes for that to get there and where the water comes from. Like a lot of people see it as just a bottle on a shelf.
Sure.
And it's like every bottle has a story, good or bad.
And Scotch especially is pretty special.
Scotch especially, yep.
So, I mean, for people out there that may not know, what makes a single malt Scotch so special?
At this point, I think a lot of it has to do with tradition. Tradition, time, craftsmanship, discipline, and patience, waiting all that time for something to mature is something that I will never have that. I will never be able to wait for things to happen. Like that's why that's probably why I kind of lean towards gin and rum.
Yeah.
Because like if I were making it, I'd be like, is it done yet?
Can I have this now? For sure. So, as of now, off the top of your head, your preferred single malt, if you had to order one right now.
The first thing that came to my mind was Lagavulin 16. I would say that was probably the first spirit that I actually really fell in love with.
Really?
Yeah. It's not over the top, beat you over the head, smoky. And it's not, it's a think piece, you know? Mm. And it's also been around for quite a long time, and I've seen the place that it comes from, and, it just kind of fits my palate like a glove, I think.
Nice. And are you doing any cocktails with Scotch? I know sometimes you see it pop up. It's not necessarily the most popular cocktail ingredient, but anything cool you're doing?
Well, I always go back to something that came from a specific request when I was working at Dram. And it was kind of like trying to put the Great American Novel into a glass. It ended up being it ended up taking years to develop, and then at Death & Co., it turned into a drink called the North Garden. And so that just had a little bit of heavily peated Scotch, a lot of apple brandy, and a little bit of bourbon. So it's like, you know, but, like through the rigorous process of tasting drinks to get on a menu at Death & Co., yeah, we were able to put it together as a team and make it something that was really, really incredible.
It must have been really horrible having to taste all those iterations.
You know what? It really is terrifying. You go up there and you pitch a drink, and you know, you see like you're sitting in front of 8 of the best bartenders that you've ever seen, and like they each have different palates, and then to be able to put something together with all the information that you, like a lot of it's like, well, what if we bump this up a teaspoon? Like, what if we knock this out? What if we use this kind of sugar instead? What if we use this kind of scotch instead?
You know, you go right back into it. You're tasting again. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's that does take a lot of discipline.
By the end of the tasting, you must have forgotten what you were trying to do. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's it definitely was a hard shift to work that night after a tasting for sure. Because even if you spit, you know, it's like it's still, you know,
yeah,
it's still coming into your body a little bit, you know.
Definitely.
But it's a rigorous process, and you know.
Cool. Well, are you excited for the MCC this year? Anything? I mean, the gala. Are you going to be there?
Yes, I will most likely be at the gala.
Cool.
But I definitely have to save myself for the whiskey tour.
Yeah, no question.
You know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon does come around pretty quickly.
Wow, is it going to be one tour? Just one shot, or are you going to be?
Well, I do know that Sammy and Mickey are doing one as well. Sam Ross and Mickey McElroy, and I believe Mike Neff from Ward 3 is also doing one.
Oh, great!
So, like, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to kind of explore different neighborhoods, and that's what I think is really cool about this program that Diageo put together.
Cool. Now, for someone who's never been to the MCC, thinking of going, where should they start? Should they go to the gala and then kind of pop around different places? What's your advice?
My advice is to carry around a gallon of water. Again, okay, so here, now I'm a hypocrite. Okay. I would say carry around a gallon of water and really pace yourself and remember to eat. And this goes specifically for the people that are working events. Remember to eat because, you know, as you probably know, like everybody's got a cocktail festival now. So like a lot of us can get a lot of practice working these things, but the one thing that we always forget to do, is we forget to eat.
Mm.
So, my advice is to pick the things that you really want to go to. Don't book yourself too hard. Remember if you're coming in from out of town, remember that New York is a magical, magical place and that there's so much to discover and, you know, don't limit yourself to a whole lot of structure is my advice.
Cool. Float around and stay hydrated.
Right.
That's the advice from Jason Luttrell. Well, thanks, man. We look forward to it. We'll be there at the MCC. I actually hope to maybe pop in on the single malt tour. I'm a Scotch dude myself.
Word.
So, thanks, man. And hopefully we'll see you on Damon's show again soon.
Yes,
come chill with him again.
Well, thank you very much.
Cool. Cheers. Thanks for being here. And again, this has been HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can catch all of our 30-plus weekly shows on our website, which are available as archived episodes. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Connect with us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, all the socials. And we'll see you guys soon. Thanks for tuning in.